Ever imagine yourself defending a client who's a little too passionate about their tax theories?
Oh, yeah.
Today's deep dive is going to give you some serious ammo for those "what about my First Amendment rights" arguments.
Right.
We're tackling United States v. Butteroff, a case from way back in 1978 that still has lawyers sweating bullets even today.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a big one.
This case is like the ultimate cautionary tale, you know, highlighting the fine line between free speech and actually helping someone break the law, especially when it comes to taxes.
Right.
It all boils down to when advocating against taxes turns into, well, aiding and abetting tax fraud.
So set the stage for us. Who were these guys, Butteroff and Dodge, and what exactly were they up to that caught the government's attention?
Picture this: 1975, Dubuque, Iowa. John Deere factory workers are gathering, but it's not for a union meeting or anything like that. Gordon Butteroff and Charles Dodge are holding court, and their topic is, shall we say, unconventional. They're mixing constitutional arguments about taxes with very specific instructions on how to file W-4s and W-4Es to, let's just say, minimize your contributions to Uncle Sam.
Wait, so they weren't just ranting about the tax system.
No.
They were giving out practical advice on how to dodge it.
Exactly. And here's the kicker. 15 attendees actually followed their instructions and filed false forms right after those meetings. That's when things went from theoretical to very, very real.
So it wasn't just talk anymore. People were actually breaking the law based on what they learned.
Yeah.
No wonder the government got involved. What charges did Butterfin Dodge end up facing?
The big ones were violating 26 U.S.C. Section 7205, which deals with fraudulent withholding statements, and 18 U.S.C. Section 2, which covers aiding and abetting a crime. Now, the aiding and abetting charge is where it gets really interesting for legal minds.
Break it down for us. What exactly did the prosecution have to prove to nail them on that? Do they have to show that Butterfin Dodge personally filed false forms themselves?
Not at all. And that's a key point for anyone advising clients on, shall we say, borderline activities.
Right.
You don't have to directly commit the crime yourself to be guilty of aiding and abetting. The prosecution just had to show that Butteroff and Dodge knowingly associated themselves with this scheme, intended for it to succeed, and took actions to make it happen. Essentially, they had to prove those instructions were a roadmap to tax evasion and that people were using that roadmap.
So even if Butterfin and Dodge argued they were just sharing their opinions, the fact that people acted on those opinions in a criminal way made them liable. That's a pretty slippery slope.
It is. And of course, their defense team tried to play the First Amendment card, arguing that Butteroff and Dodge were simply exercising their right to free speech. But the court didn't buy it, and there are three really compelling reasons why.
Okay, let's unpack those reasons. Why didn't the free speech argument hold up in court?
The first hurdle was the Brandenburg test, which comes from a landmark Supreme Court case. This test essentially says that speech inciting imminent lawless action is not protected by the First Amendment.
Right.
Think about it. Those attendees filed false forms right after the meetings. The court saw a direct link between the instructions given and the illegal actions taken, which made it look a lot like incitement rather than just harmless chatter.
So it was the timing and the direct connection between words and actions that really hurt their case.
Yeah.
Interesting. What was the second reason the free speech defense fell apart?
The court drew a very sharp distinction between simply protesting taxes in general and providing specific instructions on how to evade them. Butteroff and Dodge weren't just engaging in philosophical debates, they were giving out practical advice on how to break the law step by step.
It's like the difference between writing a treatise on tax policy and handing out a tax evasion for dummies guide.
Right.
Okay, so what was the final nail in the coffin for their free speech defense?
The court found that Butter and Dodge were directly responsible for causing the illegal activity.
Oh.
Remember, 15 attendees filed false forms right after those meetings.
Yeah.
That's not a coincidence. The court saw a clear causal link, and that's a tough thing to argue against, even with the First Amendment on your side.
So they were basically held accountable for the consequences of their words.
Right.
Their instructions directly led to those illegal filings. But was there any specific evidence that made the case airtight for the prosecution? What really convinced the court that Butter and Dodge were guilty of aiding and abetting?
Oh, absolutely. The prosecution presented some seriously compelling evidence that sealed the deal.
All right, let's dive into that evidence. What were the prosecution's strongest points?
Well, they had witness testimony from attendees who described the filing instructions in detail. You know, these weren't vague suggestions. Butterimpf and Dodge were giving out precise steps on how to fill out those forms to avoid withholding.
So it was like they were holding a workshop on tax evasion? Did multiple attendees corroborate this?
Yes, and that's what made it so damning. Multiple attendees confirmed hearing the same specific instructions. It wasn't just one person misinterpreting or exaggerating. There was a clear pattern.
That definitely strengthens the prosecution's case. Was there anything else they brought to the table?
Remember those 15 attendees who filed false forms? The prosecution presented data showing a strong correlation between attending those meetings and filing those fraudulent forms. It wasn't just a random coincidence. There was a clear cause and effect relationship.
Wow, that's pretty compelling. It seems like they were building a pretty solid case against Butteroff and Dodge. Was there anything else that sealed the deal?
This is where it gets really interesting. The prosecution presented evidence that Butteroff and Dodge didn't just give instructions and then disappear. They actually followed up with attendees after the meetings.
Wait, seriously? They were actively involved even after the fact? That seems incredibly risky, considering the legal implications.
It does, doesn't it? But that's exactly what they did. Whether it was through phone calls or letters or even in-person visits, they were checking in to see if people were following through on their, shall we say, tax-saving strategies.
So they were almost acting as coaches, guiding people through the process of tax evasion. That seems like a pretty clear-cut case of aiding and abetting.
Exactly. By connecting those dots, the speeches, the detailed instructions, the subsequent illegal filings, and the follow-up, the court concluded that Butteroff and Dodge went way beyond simply expressing their opinions. They were actively encouraging and facilitating criminal activity.
Okay, so we've established that this case set a precedent back in 1978. But why should we care about a case that's almost 50 years old? Is it still relevant in today's world?
Absolutely. United States v. Butteroff is a cornerstone case, especially for legal professionals. It has huge implications for how we navigate the intersection of free speech and illegal activities.
So what are the key takeaways from this case that still resonate today? What should lawyers and law students be paying attention to?
There are three major takeaways that have shaped legal interpretation and continue to have a huge impact today.
All right, let's break those down. What's the first lasting impact of this case?
The most significant takeaway is that creating and distributing tax protest manuals or providing detailed instructions on how to evade taxes can be seen as criminal facilitation. It's not protected speech. This applies even if you frame it as an expression of your beliefs.
So if you write a step-by-step guide on how to avoid paying taxes, you could be in serious trouble even if you argue it's just your opinion.
Exactly. The court made it crystal clear that the First Amendment doesn't protect you if you're giving specific instructions on how to break the law. And this principle extends beyond tax law to any area where speech could lead to illegal activity.
That's a crucial point.
Yeah.
Okay, what's the second takeaway that's still relevant today?
United States v. Butteroff reinforced the idea that the First Amendment, while a powerful protector of free speech, isn't absolute. It doesn't give you a free pass to encourage or facilitate criminal activity. The court emphasized that there's a bright line between expressing your opinions and providing a roadmap to breaking the law.
So you can talk about your grievances with the tax system. You can even debate its merits. But the moment you start giving specific instructions on how to commit tax fraud, you've crossed the line.
Precisely. And this is where things get especially relevant in today's digital age. Think about it. Someone could create and share a guide on how to evade taxes on cryptocurrency online, and thousands of people they've never met could use it to commit tax fraud.
Wow, that's a scary thought. So you're saying that even if you don't know the people who are using your information to break the law, you can still be held accountable?
Absolutely. And that brings us to the third major takeaway from United States v. Butteroff. The court established that aiding and abetting doesn't require direct contact between the person providing the information and the person committing the crime.
So even if you don't personally know the people using your tax protest manual or online guide, you could still be on the hook for aiding and abetting. This case is taken on a whole new level of relevance in the age of the internet.
It really highlights the far-reaching consequences our words can have and underscores the responsibility we all have, especially as legal professionals, to be mindful of the potential impact of the information we share.
It's a bit of a legal minefield, especially with how easily information can spread online. So to wrap things up, what's the big takeaway for our listeners, especially those who deal with legal and ethical gray areas every day? What's the one key point they should remember from United States v. Butteroff?
I think the most crucial takeaway is this. There's a massive difference between discussing tax protest in a general sense and giving specific instructions on how to commit tax fraud.
Right.
You're absolutely allowed to have opinions, even controversial ones, about the tax system. You can debate, discuss, even write a strongly worded blog post. But the moment you start providing step-by-step instructions on how to break the law, you've crossed that line and the First Amendment won't save you.
Yeah. It's about knowing where that line is, and as legal professionals, making sure our clients understand it too. This case really drives home the point that free speech isn't a blank check to incite illegal activity.
Exactly. And it's not just about avoiding criminal liability. It's about ethical responsibility as well.
Right.
We have a duty to use our knowledge and platform responsibly, especially when it comes to issues that could have serious consequences for others.
Well said. This deep dive into United States v. Bardolph has been incredibly insightful, and it definitely raises a lot of questions about the boundaries of free speech in our increasingly complex world. Where do you think the line should be drawn between expressing your opinions and potentially encouraging illegal actions? Something for all of us to consider, especially as we navigate the ever-evolving legal landscape.